Tweet at Today SOR.
Now, as we heard from Brian in the headlines at 11 o'clock, all new cars sold in Europe are to be fitted with automatic speed limiters to stop drivers from ever going too fast. And in fact, it was something that came up in my conversation earlier in the programme, that sad conversation with Hilary Murphy, whose daughter Katie was killed when a car being driven at speed hit a wall there near Tramore. These devices would link into speed limit information on specific roads. They're part of a broad range of changes to vehicle safety rules, which have been provisionally agreed by the European Union. In a moment, we'll hear from Conor Faulkner of the AA and Anton Savage, our regular motoring contributor. But first, I am joined from Brussels by Antonio Avenoso, the Executive Director of the European Transport Safety Council, who has been spearheading this campaign for changed rules. Good morning to you, Antonio. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
First of all, how would these speed limiters actually work in practice?
Well, yeah, thank you. First and foremost, I wouldn't call them speed limiters. It's actually a technology that is called intelligent speed assistance. And it is a technology that allows the drivers to know at any given moment the speed limit on any kind of road and help the driver to adapt to that speed limit. It could be on a motorway, it could be on a rural road, it could be in urban areas. And what is extremely important, that the technology will help the driver to abide by the speed limit, but it is at any moment overridable.
So let's say I'm on the motorway from Dublin to Galway, and it's the speed limit there is 120k. Is it possible to drive the car above 120k? From what you say, it is.
Well, it certainly is. It certainly is, because if you decide that you deliberately want to infringe the law and put your life at risk, well, you can exceed the speed limit. It is just that the car will tell you when you reach 120 kilometers per hour that that is the speed limit. But then if you want to go beyond that, you have to press harder on the accelerator pedal and the car will respond. You will be the one who remains in control of the vehicle, the one who can decide to deliberately break the speed limit.
So you might have a very good reason, not necessarily on a motorway, but in any given situation where you might need, in order to avert a dangerous situation, to press the accelerator. That presumably is the main thinking behind being able to override it.
Yes, and well, this is probably the main reason why the technology is, for the moment, technology that helps the driver to respect the speed limit. And there may be cases, for example, in which you may need to go slightly beyond that speed limit. Well, the technology will allow you to do so.
But if you decide to override it, can you stay in that situation, or does the car make it with these new devices or this new technology, intelligence, speed assistance?
Let me say that the car will never brake. The car will go beyond the speed limit, but then the moment in which you break down and you go again within the speed limit, well, the system will kick in again and will continue to work normally as before.
But does it give any kind of a noise or something like that? If you, like, for instance, if you haven't got your seatbelt on, you get the beeping going on in the car. I mean, will it do something similar if you stay above the speed limit?
Well, there will be a beep when you go above the speed limit, and the exact specifications of the length of this beep on the way it will be done will need still to be decided in the delegated acts. We'll see how it is, but certainly you will be warned that you have exceeded the speed limit.
So would you expect, for instance, that would be, and I use this word in inverted commas, as annoying as the noise that you get in the car if the seat belts aren't on?
Well, I cannot comment on that because I don't know what decision will be made, but it is important that you know. We shouldn't forget that it should be annoying, because speed remains the main contributory factor of road deaths on the European Union. And anything that can allow us to reduce our speed, to respect the speed limits, should in any way be welcome. We shouldn't forget that every 2 days, there are 140 people who lose their life on European roads, and most of those die because of inappropriate speed. And so anything should be done to help them save their lives.
And how important is this measure going to be in your view? I mean, how does this sit with other safety measures that have been introduced?
Well, this measure is a part of a package of measures, which also include measures for distraction, for automobile emergency braking, for better design of of vehicles for the safety of pedestrians. And it is extremely important. Actually, it is one of those landmarks in European road safety, which we can easily compare to the introduction of compulsory use of safety belts. Experts from the Transport Research Laboratory in the UK estimate that in the first 15 years of use of these new technologies, at least 25,000 lives will be saved on European roads.
Now, what is the status of the proposal, Antonio? Does it have the green light from everywhere it needs to get it from, be it the Commission and or the Parliament?
Absolutely. The proposal was put on the table on the 17th of May 2018. The legislative process of the European Union says that it needs also to be agreed by the European Parliament and by the Council. This happened the day before yesterday over long negotiations during the night. Now we have a political agreement in which all the three institutions agree on the proposal. We need some technicalities now. We need translation in the different languages. We need the legal services to check it. But the political agreement is there, and it needs to be formalized by the Council and the Parliament, but as I say, it needs to be formalized. The political agreement is there. We expect no changes to that.
Conor Faulkner is on the line as well from the AA. Conor, we've talked about safety with you on many times in the programme before. What do you make of this idea?
Well, I think it's a good evolution of vehicle safety. And if you look at some of the achievements of vehicle safety, the passive and active safety systems in new cars over the years, things like that seatbelt bleeper that you were talking about, Sean, I mean, this is in the same category as that. I think it's been perhaps a little bit overstated in some of the press reports today. The driver does remain in control. But if you look at things like airbags or ABS brakes or even e-call, emergency calls, I mean, nowadays a modern car knows where it is electronically, and if it crashes, it will automatically inform the emergency services. And it's one of those suites of things. I mean, technology has been one of the pillars, and perhaps even not the most important, but certainly one of the pillars that has underscored a general improvement in road safety right throughout Europe. And Ireland has been part of that. 20 years ago, 1998, Sean, there were well over 400. There were over 450 people killed on Irish roads. Last year, that number was 149. So road deaths have dropped by two-thirds in a 20-year period. And technology has been part of that. And I think this is an incremental step forward in the technology. So, I mean, I've heard some comments this morning from, you know, the bizarre to the extreme, people talking about nanny states and stuff like that. It's nothing like that. I mean, it's an improvement in vehicle technology which should help. I do have a concern, though, and it's not a technological one, Sean. If we are going to insist, if the car itself is going to insist that the motorist obey speed limits, well, then there's an essential corollary. The speed limits have got to be set correctly. And that continues to be a problem in Ireland. We have individual local authorities acting eccentrically for their own sweet reasons. We have a set of speed limits across the jurisdiction here in Ireland that really don't bear proper relation to each other. Take the N4, for example. In South Dublin, it's an eight-lane superhighway with an 80 km/h speed limit. In Roscommon, it's a single-lane Boreen with a 100 km/h speed limit. Now, I'm not even arguing which one of those is correct, but I'm absolutely saying that they're not both following the same rules.
To be consistency. Anton Savage joins me as well. Anton, one of our regular contributors. The last time, or maybe the time before that you were here, you were actually talking us through the impact of the seatbelt. And we heard from Antonio there that this innovation could be in the same category in terms of road safety.
Well, in an Irish context, nothing could be in the same category. I mean, that's where we were talking about it being the 40-year anniversary of the seatbelts and the situation where we dropped from something to the order of between 500 and 600 people per year dying on Irish roads at a time when we had far fewer cars on those roads. So in terms of the kind of major Rubicon, we are now into, thankfully, such relatively smaller numbers of people losing their lives on the road that there's no single thing that could have the kind of effect that the seatbelt had. And I think Conor is dead right when he says thing of there's a suite of measures ranging from airbags in cars to things like increasing in brake force automatically to automatic braking to pre-tensioners, all of which combined with the engineering changes, we're now much more a motorway nation than we are a two-lane road nation. So all of that has contributed greatly and will continue to contribute. There's one thing in all of this, though, that I think is getting slightly missed, and it's a thing that Antonio said where he mentioned the word inappropriate. And I think that's a critical thing you have to look at when you talk about speeding and the effect that it has. It is not the breaking of speed limits that contributes to road deaths. If you look at when the Road Safety Authority or anybody else around Europe talks about speed, it is inappropriate speed in the context. So to take that example that Connor had of the Bohrin with 100 kilometre per hour limit, if I drive off the road because I go round a corner too fast on that Bohrin, the authorities will arrive and will say, yes, speed was a contributor, regardless of the fact that the person was technically below the speed limit. And that's where I think we have to look at this and say, how much of an impact will it actually have? Because I think in an Irish context, I haven't seen a lot of evidence that says, here's the direct correlation between speed limit breaking rather than inappropriate speed and ultimate accidents. The other big question about all of this is, if you look, and you and I have talked about this before, if you look at the contributory factors in what causes a lot of road deaths, a lot of them are willful risk-taking. So you look at the sort of cohorts where you see a disproportionate amount of accidents, men predominantly, young men predominantly. If this system doesn't affect those who can willfully continue to work around it, I'd wonder how much benefit it'll have.
Antonio, that is a very significant point, isn't it?
Well, we have to say that it is true. We need to look at inappropriate speed, but speed limits are important. Speed limits need to be respected. And we also, when talking about the life-saving potential of the package of measures, we need to look at the whole package. We're just not talking here about intelligent speed assistance. We're talking about at least 15 technologies that will certainly have an impact on the way we drive and on the importance of these packages. Also, going back to infrastructure and the way we put the speed limit, vehicle safety is one part of the safe system approach to road safety. We need to look at that. We need to look at infrastructure. We need to look at behavior. We need to look at training. We need to look at emergency services. We will not have done our job by just trying to fix the vehicle or to fix the infrastructure or behavior or emergency services. They all need to look as part of a general approach to road safety.
Okay, Antonio, I'm going to let you go. Antonio Avenoso of the European Transport Safety Council, and also Anton Savage, my thanks to you. But Conor, before I let you go, green cards, people, I think they're having their minds concentrated in recent weeks in a particular way if they want to drive, if they're insured in this jurisdiction, want to drive in either Northern Ireland or the UK.
Yeah, very much so, and lots of confusion about it. We're getting lots and lots and lots of inquiries into the AA. Of course, it's Brexit related. If we don't get a hard Brexit, transition arrangement, withdrawal agreement, anything like that, if Brexit doesn't happen in a hard form, then all of this goes away. We don't need to care. But if the cliff edge occurs and the UK crashes out of the European Union, then amongst the things that will fall is a pan-European, not just EU, but across the European Economic Area, a pan-European reciprocal arrangement for motor insurance. The practical effect of that is that we will all of us have to carry an unnecessary but legally required additional document called a green card. You get it from your insurance company, you need it to show to the domestic police force in a foreign jurisdiction. And that's what the UK, including Northern Ireland, will become. So you've got plenty people who will drive back and forth across that border as part of their routine commute, and they'll need to carry these green cards in the event of a crash out. It's really frustrating, but at the moment, unless new post-Brexit rules are made, at the moment, that will be the situation. So we're getting lots and lots of people inquiring, looking for green cards from us, and we're issuing them to our own motor insurance customers, and that's being duplicated right across the board. It is unfortunately inherently wasteful, you could say unnecessary, but legally required, and is one more piece of collateral damage, sucking up time and energy and causing confusion.
But it's your own insurer, that's where you go for your
own insurer that you go to, yeah. And once you have the document, you should be fine. But you do need to clarify that with your insurer if you're regularly travelling into Northern Ireland, as many of us are. But it only becomes relevant if the UK actually crashes out without any sort of interim arrangement. So clearly, we all hope that won't happen. But clearly, it remains a live possibility.
OK, look, my thanks to you, Conor Faulkner, Public Affairs Director with the AA. Thanks indeed. And my thanks as well to our other contributors, Anton and Antonio. We'll be talking to Evelyn about a day in the family courts after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.